Welcome to Conscious Corner with Vanity. My name is Vanity Reed Dieterville. I'm a native of Charleston, South Carolina, a junior political science student at the College of Charleston, the lead podcast intern here at the Office of Sustainability, and a transgender woman of color who's forced to take a critical look at the intersections of her everyday involvement. I'm here to bring awareness to you about personal, social, economic, political, and environmental initiatives at the College of Charleston, which are more commonly referred to as the five pillars of sustainability. And I hope to highlight these initiatives for you through the sound of my voice. Hello, welcome back everyone to episode 3 of Conscious Corner with Vanity. This evening I have a wonderful young man, an incredible scholar who's inspired me to really take a critical look at the many spaces and the many endeavors that I take part of on this campus. And so I will allow him to introduce himself, name, pronouns, major, age, and anything else important or interesting that they'd like to share with the crowd. So, with you, go ahead.
Thank you, Vanity. this is Tanner Crunell. I use he, him pronouns, a third year student in English and Women's and Gender Studies, minoring in Southern Studies. I am also inspired, of course, by your activism, Vanity. It seems like
there
are always so many things that that you're doing and doing creatively that I think we all can learn from. So I'm excited to be sharing this time with you, Vanity, and you, whoever's listening, too, and brainstorm a little bit more about what sustainability really means and what that means when we talk about sustainability.
Okay, good. All right, so we'll waste no time and dive right into the first question. Basically, I want you to tell me what you know already about sustainability. What do you know?
So it seems like sustainability is a buzzword. Not only on our campus.
You know, I don't want to cut you off, but that was actually going to be one of our hashtags for Sustainability Week. Sustainability is a buzzword. That exact phrase.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you said that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's important. And I mean, now that you're saying this too, I mean, we can think about this in terms of the digital age that we have access to. When you see the hashtag Trust Black Women, it's very easy to say like, oh yeah, hashtag Trust Black Women, hashtag Black Lives Matter. But What is being operationalized behind that claim? What are the specific things that are happening behind the word sustainability?
Right.
I mean, this is something that, as an English major, I think a lot about is how we use language.
Of course.
And then what the material realities are behind those words, because they're gesturing towards something.
Right.
Right. So I guess I'm more curious to just observe how sustainability works in different ways, because like, people use it in so many different ways.
That's true. And, you know, being from a political standpoint, noticing the power of words is very important, because words offer protectionism to endangered classes of people. And I've seen how just minor adjustments to words can really cut out the protection for an entire population of people. But that's the basis of public policy. Who is it for, and who's paying for it, and who does it benefit, and who does it disparage?
Right.
So words do all of that.
Right. And so it's like, at the same time as it can be protection, it's the same time that it excludes.
Exactly.
So when we talk about sustainability, it seems like without an affirmative kind of treatment and understanding of how sustainability is working in particular ways for particular groups' interests, it can very quickly become some sort of like, oh, but we're all humans, that means we're all the same on the inside, a very essentialistic sort of like, especially with a lot of the discourses that we see about like, oh, well, climate change affects everyone. Well, yes, it does.
Yeah,
there's
but
no
it's
debating
affect
that.
Some people more harsh than
the
others.
The east side floods first.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Like that's not something that's just happens by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when we talk about sustainability, it's it's easy to kind of homogenize and say, like, this is something that everyone experiences the same, which means necessarily a reification of the white, cis, hetero perspective on what sustainability and really ecology, like environmental ecology, means.
And so I like that you talked about white perspectives as it pertains to sustainability, because one of the efforts that I'm doing right now is trying to diversify sustainability as it is right now within the institution, and really just trying to convince students of color as to why they should care, and just going through a list of what issues could be considered sustainability issues, because there are a multitude of things that could be considered sustainability issues. But I think the largest disconnect in really understanding what sustainability is attributing it only to environmentalism. Mm-hmm. And in the notion of attributing it only to environmentalism, I noticed that it becomes a very classist endeavor. And I noticed when I've gone to conferences for sustainability that there were, I could count on my hands how many Black people who were concerned with the topic. And, you know, it largely seemed like efforts towards electric scooters and electric hoverboards and rental bikes and, you know, all of these go green machinery that most typically are not accessible to underserved communities unless there's some kind of special grant or circumstance that allows them to use it. And so that's when I started getting concerned about what sustainability means across the board, because we have to really learn how to differentiate. And on that note, there are five pillars of sustainability. I'm not sure if you know them. We have personal, political, economic, social, and environmental. And so out of the five pillars of sustainability, which would you feel resonated with you the most and why?
You're probably going to roll your eyes at this. some scholars think about cultural sustainability. I would say sustainability of cultures is an important way to understand and frame. I think that that becomes important, too, when we consider that it's disproportionately white people, not only in the West, but globally, who consume the most resources, like, period.
Yeah,
that becomes a question of like, so then how much does a white perspective hold? How much space should a white perspective on sustainability hold, really?
Ooh, wow.
If the white kind of viewpoint has already done so much damage
by consuming.
Right, through consumption. So, so that gets at the personal and political elements of it, and to an extent, the environmental.
Uh-huh.
But I would say, for me, the thing that is really interesting is cultural sustainability, because we have to think about how the West can sustainably move forward with histories that we really don't have an understanding of how the West and white people in the West can not consume and not dominate, not enslave, either in a very literal sense, or in a kind of broader sort of metaphysical sense.
And in a broader studied historical sense, it's typically been profit from taking. And so it's interesting you mentioned consumption, because in one of Dr. Hollis Francis' classes I took last semester, the politics of globalization, we talked about benefits and consequences of globalizing lesser developed nations and what globalization in this day looks like. But one thing that they talked about as it related to climate change was how our consumption contributes towards adverse climate change. And that's the factor of climate change that receives the most resistance, is us trying to alter our consumption. And if the world were to live by the consumption rates that Americans or Westerners did, we would need five planets to sustain everyone if we were all consuming the same pattern, which I thought was a really interesting fact, and appreciate you for bringing up consumption. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, no, I mean, I think that's all. And then, so then we have to, I mean, to me, the natural next step is then we have to question the very basis of who we're talking about when we say sustainable, whose consumption we want to curb, and how we want to shift the way that we think about ourselves, think about our cultures in a way that doesn't re-marginalize.
Okay. Wow. Excellent. Okay. What do you feel is the most critical portion of your identity and why? And how has this portion of your identity impacted your matriculation at this institution?
Wow. It's tough because there's so many there's so many parts to everyone's identity.
Right.
And parts that I don't even, probably don't even know. I might discover within the next 10 years a part of who I am.
That's true.
Maybe not a demographic marker. I mean, I know that I'm a white, genderqueer male who is generally identifies as homosexual or monosexually attracted to men. I mean, I think those are parts of it. I think that it's important that I'm white, and not only white, but white from a Western European background, from
as opposed to,
for example, white passing and with Jewish heritage or with Polish heritage, like many different
Spanish heritage,
right?
Okay,
right. Like
makes
all
sense.
These things feed into. I would say epigenetics, but then also like the histories and lineages that of the resources that I have access to.
Okay.
I think it's important that I am at an institution of higher education currently, that I've been positioned in a place where the people around me are working for my benefit. Every person who's employed by this institution is benefiting me right now. So I think that that's an important thing to kind of question.
Yeah.
As part of my identity as a college student, for example, I think, you know, particularly growing up gay in a Southern Baptist home. You know, that's right. Like, that's something
that's already an interesting dynamic.
Right. Like, and it's traumatizing.
Mm-hmm.
That's traumatizing. And then to come to campus and be verbally assaulted is re-traumatizing.
Exactly.
To go into student health services and ask for information about pre-exposure prophylaxis, which helps to prevent HIV prevention. Of course, you know.
Yes.
And have them say, I don't know what that is. Can you tell me what it is? And then Like this, I mean, this is so. I mean,
really?
So this happens.
Appalling.
I know it is. It really is appalling. And it makes me think. You know, if this institution isn't the place where those conversations
are being had,
right? Then where? Where else would it be happening? So, I mean, I guess a lot of my identity too is trying to empathize with the pain of people around me.
Uh-huh.
In order to, as much as we can, constructively, like, express that a way that asserts our pain in a very clear and uncompromising way, but then also tries to effect a broader change.
Okay.
So I would say that I've invested a lot of my identity in that, and it becomes a problem.
Almost like throwing yourself into a fire, but for a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never really thought. Until you said it about every employee in this institution being for my benefit, even looking at it from whatever perspectives I consider privileged, you know, the most forefront being a college student, I feel like it's the most privileged of the most of the other identities. But I've never taken that look, like, you know, the people who clean up and, you know, I'm thankful for them and the people in the cafeteria and the actual faculty and the man who gave me the microphone at the desk just now, being there for my benefit. I feel like a lot of times we think of our operations as very separatist, not working towards a collaborative end goal. There's kind of like an alienation in the work, even while being at an institution, that causes me to not think of it the way you mentioned it.
Mm. Well, I think I do want to say, I think that it does happen in different particular ways. Like, I mean, I don't have to do sort of, I don't have to do the emotional labor of recovering from a transphobic comment, which is more common, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Don't have the statistics.
Yeah.
So I don't have to do that labor as much as I would have to recover from a homophobic comment.
Right.
And that's not to say that, like, my body has ever been threatened, for example, or that I would be dismissed, that my very presence in a classroom would be dismissed, what I'm thinking be dismissed because of my race or ethnicity. Like, those are things
I do think
that, like, we're not, I don't mean to say that this institution is like everyone's working together and it's all happy. No, it's a political space and there's fighting that happens. But I do also think that as students, with what we're paying,
right,
we have a whole bunch of people who are working for us, in a sense.
Yes.
Or at least that we're
in
working
together. In its most
basic
form,
Yeah,
that's what happened.
So I think that's just something that makes, that interests me, because when we walk around and see, for example, service staff, there's no one who's really working for them, right?
No.
No,
not ever, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then it becomes something that all of this kind of informs my positionality on this campus, and the different interests that I have. It's a roundabout way of.
Wow. Yeah. No, that was good. That was good. Okay. So we kind of tapped on environmentalism a little earlier. But through what lens do you view environmentalism? You can go into a little bit more on some of the things that you touched on in the past, a few questions ago.
Yeah.
So being as environmentalism is just one of the many pillars of sustainability, what do you feel like, and this can be a lens through pop culture, this can be through personal experiences, but what lens do you view the concept of environmentalism? Who are the primary agents within environmentalism in your eyes? Just what do you think about the notion of environmentalism currently, right now?
Mm. Well, I see it kind of in a historical, like, the idea of environmentalism is historical. I mean, Western science has created the conditions for environmental degradation.
Yes.
That is what, I mean, the creation of the internal combustion engine,
for
one of a few examples,
mm-hmm.
Is necessarily what requires an environmental, chemical, biological response from humankind.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I think that one of the core problems really is how science works and how science is constructed. That, I mean, when science and scientific methods have been theorized, it was within the Enlightenment, it was by Enlightenment philosophers,
mm-hmm.
who were completely okay with enslaving people, and
mm-hmm.
so we have to question a bit of what the science is doing there.
Yes.
So at the same time saying, it's science that brought us here, so science has to do some of the work to save us, but help us adapt. We have to interact with science in a way, and scientific knowledge in a way that allows us to allows our brains to evolve almost.
Okay.
So I think that that's one thing when I think of environmentalism, is I think of how historically contingent it is, that it's a scientific response to a scientific problem. The concern that I have is that when we talk about sustainability in terms of environmental sustainability, ecological sustainability,
right,
that it is, I'll try and explain this a bit more. Like the, that it's, that it becomes a, that it becomes a reinstatement, a re, reascription of white male, subjectivity, that there's some way that re-centering, scientific approaches to understanding,
uh-huh.
homogenizes yet again, which undermines, my firm commitments and your firm commitments to intersectionality.
Yes.
Concerning. That's concerning.
Yeah.
When we say the environment affects everyone. Well, yes, it affects everyone, but it affects everyone in vastly different ways.
Right.
And
so I think that begs the question for me, what sustainable practices are across cultures, especially in our own consumption. A professor made the point to me, sustainability across underserved community might be getting the most for your dollar in eating at the nearest fast food restaurant, especially if you're in a food desert, and not spending your money on those vegetables because maybe you need some more of those different types of calories in order to sustain your work, because maybe you're working more labor-intensive hours as opposed to your counterparts. And so there are life patterns that affect our consumption. And so the means of altering those consumptions is going to look vastly different. And you're right, those who are going to be affected by the issues of environmental default will be at different paces. So this whole notion of leveling the damage, mm-hmm. in a sense, of who is harmed from the ecological irresponsibility, is slightly problematic. On one cadence, is it heightening the understanding of everyone, or is it trying to in homogenizing?
Well, so I think, let me just say that I don't think that eating fast food should be the only option someone has. Unfortunately, it
right.
is.
Right. In some cases, it is.
And in terms of immediate self-preservation, that is sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that is sustainable in the long term. Now, the key distinction here is that, do you condemn the person who eats fast food? Right.
Right.
Is that then a personal moral failing? Or is that something that we see, wow, what about the bourgeois ruling power structure allows this to happen?
Yeah.
That there are food deserts in the town that I live in.
Yeah.
To me, that seems like there still can be an impulse for basic human decencies,
mm-hmm.
sort of, or human rights, sort of. I think that that's also a term up for debate. But in the sense what everyone is entitled to, and that if we're all entitled to the same thing, then that means that really the larger problem is putting brackets around what those who disproportionately consume can consume.
Right.
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 So that becomes to me the,
if we want to truly and practically talk about how it affects us all, then we need to take into account to what proportion we impact or cause or affect the harm that we're all going to suffer from.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. Like there are different, so it's intentions versus impacts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy for me to say here, we need to be, everyone should be sustainable.
Right.
I don't think anyone would argue probably that we need to be sustainable,
right.
unless if you don't benefit from sustainability, which tends to be those who are in the ruling class. So then it becomes,
mm-hmm.
Sustainability also becomes almost a method. Now I'm thinking in terms of, it's almost a method for organizing,
yeah.
Around questioning and undermining the authority with which the bourgeois extracts resources and labor
disproportionately. I read something recently because I'm doing a study on the ranking of importance of some social issues over others and its relationship to the Democrats controlling the House of Representatives right now. But in some of my preliminary research, I'm finding articles that really outlines that environmentalism fundamentally aligns with what conservative values are and conservatism. However, those who identify as conservative traditionally in our time have not supported environmentalism because, just like you said, it would disparage them from the profits that they would yield from said corporations that don't practice sustainability. So it's really interesting to see how it aligns with a set of beliefs, yet is not endorsed by those who have the beliefs.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And I mean, so there are some organizations, I mean, I can't say they're doing bad work by working with corporations to curb the really gross and seemingly untamable consumption, right? Like it's that's not bad work necessarily,
yeah.
But it's a question of like, I don't know. To me, it becomes a question of whose interests are being represented the most.
Right.
Whose interests are the loudest?
Right.
Because we cannot say. That, and this is, I think, where some sustainability discourse breaks down, is that we can't say this affects everyone the same, because it just simply doesn't. And there's something that is at stake for white people in the West, that we will have to sacrifice some of what we consume.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a fact of how it's going to move forward. And, I mean, that has to be something that we're willing to take on if we want to see sustainability as a really viable option, and something that reflects the needs of more than just the central speakers.
Okay. So I think we've discussed a lot of outside, but I guess I want to hone in more on what it looks like for you here. So if you don't mind, I'd like you to talk about what efforts are you currently taking to impact either social or political sustainability here on campus and in your personal stride?
Yeah, I think the easy sort of cop-out answer is here's my coffee. I bring my cup around to places that I am.
And I get my 56 cents iced coffee from Starbucks for my reusable cup.
Right. Yes. excellent plan for any students. I try not to eat meat when I more than I need to. Once a day, at the most.
Yeah.
So that helps to curb some of the carbon that I'm responsible for.
Yeah.
But I also have to recognize that as comforting as it is to know that I'm doing my part, doing my part,
right.
This is not solved by individual force of will.
No.
Period. Like, it's just not it. We have to collaborate, and I think that sustainability asks us to see ourselves as enmeshed in this sort of ecological web.
Yeah, it's very systems based. That's
right.
the train of thought.
Right, like it's interaction. So I think that beginning the shift to seeing those things as everything truly interconnected, as like nebulous as that sounds, like committing to that idea is really powerful. Something that I've found is helpful. And encouraging other people to see things as complex and large, and that we have to embrace environmental sustainability in terms of ecology, consumption, biology, chemistry. But
yes.
Then we also have to ask what specific interests are being represented in those discussions. So this is, I mean, a lot of the work with Intersectional Cougar Action Network, ICANN, is...
Shout out to ICANN.
Yeah, hello. and this is what I see, this study that we're going to be embarking on. We're trying to do, for those listening, Vanity and I are going to be charting experiences of identity-based pain and targeting on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to represent those standpoints to
yes.
administrators in a meaningful structural way
right.
That can produce rules, policies, norms, consciousness
mm-hmm.
on our campus
mm-hmm.
that doesn't recenter whiteness, that
mm-hmm.
asks whiteness to be sacrificed, sort of, that asks masculinity to be reformed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All these things, asking that of our institution, is a start, I think.
And I think
like stuff that's happening in the office too with the zero waste events, you know, that's another wonderful thing that empirically benefits everyone.
That's true.
However, we also have to be wondering at the same time the particulars of it. Whose labor is responsible for after zero waste events, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Who is responsible for bringing recycling out? You know, like those sorts of things. I think about it in terms of labor. Oftentimes, but I mean, I guess a lot of it's trying to represent different social perspectives on how our campus works.
Right.
To an administration which is overwhelmingly white.
Yes.
With one woman of color.
Overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And having have met with the Board of Trustees myself, it was not only interesting to sit in a room where all of the portraits were white men,
mm-hmm.
but all of the board, but one person, were white individuals. And so in that
mm-hmm.
instance, I realized that speaking truth to power was just an understatement to what it really takes to affect institutional change. Realizing that the representation of minoritized identities is so historically not represented, that when you walk into a space, you can just really feel almost not belonging, but being there with purpose and not being afraid, but knowing that the space was not designed for those who look like you originally. It's just really interesting to see pictures in like
mm-hmm.
halls like that
mm-hmm.
are the biggest like tell-all, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and I mean, I would imagine that it feels, you know, this is the broader thought about campus, right? It's
mm-hmm.
like the enslaved hands that made these buildings, that made the bricks that we walk on,
mm-hmm.
The current white hands who decorate with dried cotton. All of these things represent subconscious sorts of thoughts about what we're entitled to,
mm-hmm.
what we're allowed to do as an institution, which itself doesn't have any sort of like consciousness, but can also choose. You know, key institutional players can choose to represent those the subjectivities of all people,
yeah.
as opposed to historically those who have benefited from it.
Yeah.
So I think that's something on campus that, you know, and I'm also reminded of Kimberly Crenshaw wrote in, it was a 2017 article about the emergence of critical race theory out of a fight by student activists.
And so what is critical race theory?
Critical race theory being, and Crenshaw in this article defines it as the effort to theorize and understand race in a way that isn't focused so much on erasing bias, so much as it is distributing power.
Okay.
So distributing resources, distributing power.
So like a socialistic way of viewing race relations?
Well, I mean, in a sense. I mean, yeah, in a
maybe.
Sense. I mean, so it's a lot of intersectional feminism is informed by this.
Okay, I can understand.
And it's sort of, yeah, so it's like, so it's saying like, racism, white supremacy is a failing of morality. However, that's not where it ends.
Right.
And if we want to create a sustainable institution and sustainable way of seeing ourselves, then we have to distribute the power to govern this institution.
Okay, that makes sense.
To people who are on the margins. So that's what I see some of the stuff that we're doing with ICANN is doing, is trying to represent that, advocate for that, and then demanding that power be shared, that it's not unidirectional, that it's collaborative, like truly collaborative.
Okay, yeah. Wow. Well, I will have to read that. You'll have to forward that to me.
Yeah, I'll have to.
That's the end of what I have. Do you have anything interesting else that you want to let the crowd know or anything else on your heart that you want to share? You also don't have to feel pressured to do so if you don't.
No, I think one thing that's important is sustainability of self, not in the individualistic sense, but in terms of how are you self-care, which Audre Lorde says is an act of political warfare. Self-preservation is not self-indulgence. It is an act of political warfare. I butchered that.
I'm finally reading her Sister Outside right now.
Oh, my God. Yes, I love her. So you can think of this through a Black feminist lens, of course, and self-preservation being an important part of that, I think. But what that can't look like, in my opinion, is the individualistic way of seeing like, self-care is something that I do at the expense of others. It's something that we can see as doing with others and among others.
Mm-hmm.
Others being whatever community you belong to, communities you belong to, and allowing that to sort of diffuse into the network, making self-care as sort of culture and a commitment that you have among a group of people. Because I think that the tendency with people who really care, really, really care about the social world,
yes,
is that we burn out. And that's not sustainable.
Overwhelmingly, yes.
Yeah. And so self-care might not look like taking a trip to Europe, you know?
Although it'd
self-care,
be cute.
Oh, my God. No, of course. I mean, of course, I think that it is. But that's not an option for everyone.
That's,
and so,
yeah,
so if you're able to see self-care as a set of practices that you enact for yourself,
mm-hmm,
but then also that a community can support you in, then it becomes a really powerful tool for seeing how we navigate the campus.
Well, Tanner, I want to thank you wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Thank you.
From the bottom of my soul for speaking with me today. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode of Conscious Corner. Hopefully, I will have another ASMR for you guys featuring either Sustainable U Garden or Stone Soup Collective, so please stay tuned for that. But thank you for tuning in to this week's Conscious Corner with Vanity, and I'll see you next time.
Synergies is a digital platform produced by the Office of Sustainability at the College of Charleston to educate, inspire, and mobilize students, staff, and the greater community to embody sustainability in their work and their lives. We intend Synergies to be a community resource with articles, essays, artwork, podcasts, and DIY projects connected with creating a thriving earth for all.